Jaya Radha Madhava Mrityunjaya Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Gopi Jana Balava Giribana Dari Gopi Jana Balava Giribana Dari Yasoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yasoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Jamuna Tira Banachari Jamuna Tira Banachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Gopi Jana Balava Giribana Dari Gopi Jana Balava Gopi Jana Balava Giribana Dari Yasoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yasoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Jamuna Tira Banachari Jamuna Tira Banachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Gopi Jana Balava Jirbanada Vijana Balava Jirbanada Gopi Jana Balava Girbana Dari Yasoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana 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 Jamuna Tira Banachari Jamuna Tira Banachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari
Paramahamsa Parvacharya Asasara Shishi Mad, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki, Anantakoti Vaishnavinda Ki, Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki, Premchakoti Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Garadhar Shivasadi Gaur Bhaktivinda Ki, Shishi Radha Krishna Go Gopinath Chaimakunda Radhakunda Gir Govardhana Ki, Vrindavan Dham Ki, Mayapur Dham Ki, Jagannath Puri Dham Ki, Jamuna Mai Ki, Ganga Mai Ki, Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda Ki. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's the chapter. What is the name of the chapter? Bhagavatam is the answer to all questions. And this is text what number? 21. Can somebody read the Sanskrit?
Yadam Nirbhinayakshanitasya
Nirbhinayakshanitasya
Jyotishchakshurgunagraha
Jyotishchakshurgunagraha Jagadatmani Niralokam.
Jagadatmani Niralokam.
Atmanam cha didrikshataha.
Atmanam didrikshataha.
Nirbine yakshine tasya.
Nirbine yakshine tasya.
Jyotish chakshur gunagraha.
Jyotish chakshur gunagraha.
Yadatmani niralokam. Atmanam cha didrikshataha. Nirbine yakshini tasya. Jyotish chakshur gunagraha.
Chakshur gunagraha
yada
while
atmani unto himself niralokam
without any light
atmananam
his own transcendental body
cha also other bodily forms.
Drikshataha,
desired to look upon.
Nirbani,
due to being sprouted.
He
for
Akshani,
of the eyes.
Kasya,
of him.
Jyotihi,
the sun,
Chakshu,
the eyes,
Gunagraha,
the power of seeing.
Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada.
Thus, when everything existed in darkness, the Lord desired to see himself and all that was created. Then the eyes, the illuminating God, sun, the power of vision in the object of sight all became manifested.
Purport.
The universe is by nature dense darkness, and therefore the total creation is called tamas, or darkness. The night is the real feature of the universe, for then one cannot see anything, including oneself. The Lord, out of his causeless mercy, first desired to see himself and all the creation as well, and thus the sun became manifested. The power of vision for all living entities became possible, and the objects of vision were also manifested. This means that the whole phenomenal world became visible after the creation of the sun.
Om Agyana Timarandasya Ganangana Salakaya Chaksur Umilitam Nena Tasmai Shri Gurve Namaha Mukam Karochi Vachalam Panganglam Hayate Girim Yakripa Tamaham Bande Shri Guru Dinatarnam Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shiva Sedigor Bhaktivrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare
Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Vanchakalpa, Chirubhyascha, Kripa, Sindhubhyevacha, Patitanam, Pavanebhyo, Vaishnavebhyo, Namo Namaha. So the verse again. Thus, when everything existed in darkness, the Lord desired to see himself in all that was created. Then the eyes, the illuminating God, sun, the power of vision, and the object of sight all became manifested. So actually, Kalakanta Prabhu, the ISKCON GBC Minister of Agriculture, was supposed to give class today. And I didn't know I was going to be giving class. I was scheduled before him, but then I got bumped. But now I'm back and giving the class. But I didn't prepare for it. Usually I read it and take notes the night before. So I apologize for this. But there's some really wonderful things in this verse and purport. First of all, the statement that the material world is just dense darkness. It's important that we remember that. And there's a very wonderful prayer, the Om Agyana Timarandasya Ganangana Salakaya Chakshurum Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. And it means that I was standing in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master is forcing open my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my obeisances unto him. So this is our position. We're trying to get this knowledge. This theme of darkness is and light is almost everywhere in the Vedic scriptures. There's a verse in the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam talking about the Bhagavatam itself, and it's saying that this Bhagavatam has appeared in this age and people can get light from it. So, you know, we talk about enlightenment. We want to become enlightened. And that is, it's an internal thing. Just like we said that Srila Prabhupada is forcing open our eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. It's an internal thing. We have to become enlightened. Our heart has to become purified. And it's interesting that Srila Prabhupada started his magazine, Back to Godhead, in 1944, and he called it Back to Godhead. And he had a little slogan with it. He said, Godhead is light, nescience is darkness. Where there is Godhead, there is no nescience. So this is the process that we have to purify ourselves. We have to associate with Krishna, who's the light. And we have to remember that we're in darkness. So, and also in this verse, and also like the 10 or so verses around this, the word desire is mentioned in each of the verses, like the Lord desired. So this is very important. The Lord desires something, it happens. When we desire something, it may not happen right away, but actually everything is based on our desire. There's that picture in the Bhagavad Gita where it shows the banyan tree reflected in the water. It's upside down, but it's reflected on desire. So desire is very important, and it's an open secret that if you want to become Krishna conscious, you have to want it, you have to desire it. There's the word, I think, lalyam. It's that intense greed for attaining Krishna consciousness. We have to have that intense desire. I think we've all really desired something, you know, very intensely, I can remember when I was a freshman in high school, I wanted to make the football team. And I wanted it so much, and I tried so hard. I was completely absorbed in it. And I made it. You know, Krishna fulfilled that desire. But that was a material desire, and it wasn't very satisfying. But we should all have that connection, or make that commitment that in order to become Krishna conscious, we have to want it. We have to want it more than anything else. there's a famous analogy of, they used to have these punishments where they would put you on the end of a stick and they would dunk you into water and they'd keep you there for a long time. And then they'd bring you up for air, you know, and you'd just be so grateful and so, you know, finally I get some air. And the analogy is that we have to want to become Krishna conscious more than we want, like our next breath, even if it's kind of being held from it. So these are things that we have to, incorporate in our daily lives. We have to desire it. We have to find out, what is the desire of the Lord? What is the desire of Srila Prabhupada? What is the desire of our spiritual master? And try to fulfill these things. It's described that we should take the order of the spiritual master as our life and soul. So we have to find out what it is. And of course, we know that when we take initiation, we all promise that we follow the four rickets of principles and we chant 16 rounds every day. And I've been thinking lately about this chanting of Hare Krishna, and it's such a wonderful process that we've been given, just to chant this the names of Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And just by this chanting, we can attain all perfection. And right from the beginning, Srila Prabhupada, he gave us like the mood how we should chant. He said, just like a mother, just like a child who's crying for his mother, we should chant in that mood of separation, that, you know, the mother picks up the child so it will stop crying. In the Course, Lord Chaitanya's Shakastaka verse, he says, you know, pick me up and place me as one of the atoms at your lotus feet. And that means that we can render some service. And you think about this Hare Krishna mantra. The Hari Nama, Hari Nama, Hari Nama, Eva Kevalam, Kalu, Nisteva, 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 Gati, Aranyarha. It's the process for everyone for this age. But look at all the people who have chanted the Hare Krishna mantra. Of course, our own spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, and his spiritual master, the Goswamis, Lord Chaitanya himself was chanting the Maha Mantra. It's described that when Radharani and the gopis are feeling intense separation from Krishna, they also chant this Maha Mantra. So it's a very, very powerful, potent mantra that we have to chant it without offenses. We have to be attentive while we're chanting this mantra. And then we can have all these good results that come. We can become purified. We can become out of this darkness and into the light of Krishna consciousness. We have to step into the light of Krishna consciousness. There's also that example, like the sunshine. The sunshine is there for everyone. But some people, if they want to hide in a cave, what can you do? They can do that. But it's there for everyone, just like the Hare Krishna mantra. It's there for everyone. And simply we have to stay in its association, and there'll be that benefit, that warmth, that light, and that we can actually become purified. We can get out of this ignorance that we're born in. So these are some of the things that are, you know, coming to my mind when I'm reading this verse. So also, just on a another note, I was meditating on these footprints of Srila Prabhupada, and there is actually a wonderful story about how they came to be. And it's very important to get the dust of the lotus feet of the spiritual master. Lord Bhaktisiddhanta, when he was going to the different places where Lord Chaitanya had his pastimes, he installed footprints of Lord Chaitanya in those places to be worshipped there, and they're still there to this day. Also, if you go to Vrindavan, to the Radha Damodar temple, and you give the pujari a little donation, he'll show you the footprint of Krishna, that actually Krishna's footprints melted into stone, and they have that stone there at the Radha Damodar temple. So there's a lot of examples in our line of the footprints of Krishna, of Lord Chaitanya. And in New Vrindavan, when we were working on Srila Prabhupada's palace, we were starting to make molds to cast different ornaments to go on the palace. And I happened to be one of the mold makers, and we started talking about how it would be so nice to have Srila Prabhupada's footprints. You know, you want to follow in the footsteps of the previous acharya. And so we talked about it for a while, and then when Srila Prabhupada came to New York for 1976 for Rath Yatra, Kirtananda and Kaladri decided they were going to go and ask Srila Prabhupada if he would step in some clay to make his footprints so that we could make a mold of it and have those footprints and distribute them to all the different temples. So we used to buy blocks of clay. It was like a 25-pound bag of clay. It was pretty soft. You know, that's what we used to make our molds in New Vrindavan. So when Srila Prabhupada was in New York, they asked him, you know, if he would kindly, you know, step on some clay so he would make his footprints. And you got to understand, you know, Srila Prabhupada, he's very humble, but he's also Jagat Guru. You know, he's spiritual master of the whole universe, and you don't want to bother him and, you know, take up his time for, you know, different nonsense. But anyways, they asked him if he would step in some clay for his footprints, and he agreed to it. So they had this slab of clay, and Srila Prabhupada, they put a little talcum powder on the clay, and Srila Prabhupada stepped in it. And then he went back into his room. But there was a little problem with this first one, is that there was hardly any impression, even though the spiritual master is heavy, you know, he's the guru. For some reason, there was hardly any impression in the clay. And they kind of, you know, talked among themselves a little bit, and they said, okay, let's add some more water to the clay, make it softer, and we'll ask Srila Prabhupada again if he'll step into the clay. So Kaladri was in the hallway adding water to the clay and kneading it, making it softer and softer. And they got it where it was soft enough. They thought, okay, this will be nice. And they asked Srila Prabhupada again if he would step in the clay. And again, you know, they put some talcum powder on top of the clay so the clay wouldn't stick to Srila Prabhupada's feet. And Srila Prabhupada again so kindly agreed to it, and he came out, and he and this time he stepped into the clay. He stepped in with his right foot first, and it kind of sank down kind of deeply than his left foot. And Kaladri was there, and he pressed down on each of his toes a little bit to make sure there was a nice impression. And Srila Prabhupada stepped off, and he went back into his room. And this is the impression that is, you know, we have all around ISKCON. And they brought that clay back to New Vrindavan, and I was the mold maker. I got to make the mold, and of course, it took a little of the talcum powder dust and put it on my head. And both of those footprints are still there in New Vrindavan. They made a little glass case. It's up in the palace, the Srila Prabhupada's palace. They still have those, the clay, the actual clay that Srila Prabhupada stepped in. But if you look closely at all these footprints, you'll see like the right foot, you know, the heel is sunk down a little deeper, and you know, the toes are nice and defined in his Srila Prabhupada's lotus feet. So that is the story of how we got these wonderful footprints that we offer all the flowers to every day. So, I don't have my glasses either. But are there any questions or comments on this verse?
Not so much of a question, but this material world is also compared to a deep, dark well, and it's difficult to get out. See, difficult to get out, and so we have to get a shelter of the spiritual master. See. We have to get a shot of a spiritual master to get out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's our way out.
And so many other things. Even material life, grihastha life is also called andakupam, the dark well. See? So sometimes even the sun, the sun might be there too, but still, the world can still be dark, see? And of course, without knowledge, also knowledge of the scriptures, we can be in the darkness of ignorance, see? And cannot get out. Material knowledge is useless knowledge. It simply entangles us more.
Yeah.
But but the world is revolving around that, thinking that that's wisdom. See, yeah, but it's all ignorance. See, simply implicate ourselves in this useless knowledge.
Okay, thank you.
Just to add a little bit to the sunlight.
Yeah, and. Of course, the point here is that we're so dependent on Krishna for everything. You know, we may think we're independent, or we're puffed up with so much, you know, power or knowledge or talents, but, you know, we're born into ignorance. It's dense darkness. And if Krishna didn't, you know, create the sun, we couldn't see anything right now. You know, what good are our eyes? They're dependent on light. You know, we're so dependent on Krishna for everything. And so that should make us very humble and very grateful that, you know, Krishna is helping us. He wants us to go back home, back to Godhead. That's Krishna's desire. It actually says that he wants us to go back home, back to Godhead, more than we want to go. And he's always willing to help us. He wants to help us, but he won't do it unless we desire it. But if we take, you know, one step to Krishna, then he'll take, you know, 10 steps towards us. And what are Krishna's steps? You know, they're unlimited steps. So whatever little bit we do, Krishna appreciates it. He's there. He wants to help us. He actually loves us. He wants us to, you know, go back home and be with him. And this this world is not our real place. There's this one tape of Srila Prabhupada. He's coming into an airport. And I really like this. He just gives a little speech. And he says, just like when I come into your country, I'm considered a foreigner. So we should all consider ourselves foreigners in this material world. And it's such a simple little thing, but it's so deep with meaning. And if we can really, you know, imbibe this, that this is not where we really belong. We belong with Krishna in the spiritual world. Then we'll act, you know, accordingly. So Srila Prabhupada had a way of just saying these simple little things, but they had so much potency and realization behind it. And we can get light from these things. Prabhu?
Yeah, you kind of explained it, but my question is, Krishna desires, and it automatically happens, whatever he desires, his energies take care of that. And my understanding is that Krishna desires for us to go back to Godhead, go back to be with him. Why isn't that it automatically, we don't become Krishna conscious? Is it because we have that free will, or what's keeping us? Yeah. Krishna is desiring it, but yet it's not happening. What's keeping us here?
It's your free will. Krishna could, you know, make us go back to Godhead, but he doesn't want a robot. He doesn't want it, you know, mechanical or forced. And that's the great thing about love. It's so great that, you know, Krishna gave us free will, because with love and free will, we can actually love him, you know, and that's what he's looking for, that rasa. You know, Krishna's all about rasa, all about love. And if something is forced, there's no love.
The material energy, because it doesn't have a soul, it doesn't have life. Krishna gives it that life by glancing at it, right? That's understandable. And then, so what happens is, because we're part and parcel of Krishna, we have that independence, and we're misusing that independence to try to enjoy, or, you know, enjoy this material world, and that's what's keeping us from going. And that's that freedom that we have.
Right.
So the matter in itself, he can give it life and get it to function. But yet, because of the free will, we are stuck here because of us.
Yeah, and to remember that we're very, very small. So we have a tendency that we can be covered. We can become illusion, but that's what it is. It's Maya. It's what is not. It's illusion. I don't know if that answers your question, but it's basically, we are eternal servants of Krishna, but somehow or other, that's how Prabhupada translates the Shikasaka verse, somehow or other we've fallen into this ocean of material ignorance. And we've been here for a long, long time. And now, though, we're getting an opportunity. You know, we've been in darkness. The whole material world is darkness, ignorance. But now we have an opportunity. And Srila Prabhupada, on many occasions, would say, don't waste this human form of life. You know, we have, it's a rare opportunity. You know, we have Lord Chaitanya appeared, you know, only 500 years ago. We have Srila Prabhupada, great devotee, pure devotee. So we have so many things that going for us. And if we don't take advantage of it, it's a very catastrophic thing. So we have to take advantage of what we've been given and have gratitude for it.
I remember one conversation, morning walk conversation, where Prabhupada, it's a long conversation, but at one point, Prabhupada quoted this verse 1861 from Bhagavad Gita, Ishvara Sarva Bhutanam Riddhesha Arjuna Tishtati, that Krishna directs every soul to by placing them in a machine called body. So then Rameshwar Prabhu says, since Krishna is directing, why not he direct towards himself? Then problem is solved. So then Prabhupada stopped and he says, yes, you are right. Krishna is directing, but he's not directing according to his own desire. He's directing according to individual soul's desire. So then after a few minutes, Rameshwar Prabhu says, so then we have to develop desire to go to him. Prabhupada said, yes. Then it's complete. So then I was thinking, like, did Krishna make us complete? Are we complete or incomplete? So then I found Baladev Vidyabhushan Thakur in Gita Bhashya, he gives an explanation that Lord Krishna is eternally complete by himself. He does not need anything. But we are also complete, but not independently complete. Krishna is independently, eternally complete. Our completeness comes dependently on Krishna. So those who are coming towards to depend means we have to align with his what he wants. We should align. Then we feel that. Otherwise, Prabhupada gave that example. I'm sure you all heard this. That a finger cut off from the body loses its utility or functionality. So when we come back, then we have full-fledged completeness, and we'll not discuss these topics, I'm sure, once we are there.
Yeah. Om Purnamadaha Purnamidam.
Yes.
This is just in the same vein of thought, though, is the, one of the, because there's, we have different kinds of perfections and all the Kripa Siddha is one of them, Sadhana Siddha and Nitya Siddha. So Kripa Siddha means special mercy of Krishna, or his devotee. He gives them special mercy. So this is supposed to be, we hear that this is very rare. So we could think it should be more often, but special mercy.
Yeah. Krishna is completely independent. He can give it as he likes, and you know, it's not up to us. It just, it reminds me of sometimes people will get an honorary degree to a university even though they didn't go there. The university can do that if they want, but we shouldn't think, oh, this person got an honorary degree, didn't go to university. I don't have to go and study and pay all this money. I'll just, you know, wait around till I get an honorary degree, because it probably won't happen. So, yeah, some people may get some Kripa mercy, you know, maybe Kripa city, but we shouldn't wait around thinking, oh, you know, maybe I can get that. You know, we have to do the work. We have to perform the sadhana. And still, even if we perform the sadhana and stuff, that doesn't mean, you know, that Krishna is obligated that he has to do it. It's still his mercy, and it's still, you know, his grace. We can't, you know, demand, oh, you know, I've chanted 16 rounds and I'm following the four regular principles for 50 years, you know, what's happening? How come nothing's happening? You know, but it's Krishna's prerogative. But I think that almost every devotee will say that they have some taste. Otherwise, why would they keep doing this? you know, that we're feeling something or we're convinced, you know, somehow that it's the right thing to do, and we, you know, perform these, you know, so-called austerities of chanting 16 rounds and following four regulative principles. But that's the medicine. As Srila Prabhupada, that's the medicine. I can't change the medicine. You know, you have to take the medicine, and it's chanting Hare Krishna and following the four regulative principles. I was listening to this Bhakti Charu Swami, who was saying that he was with Srila Prabhupada, and I can't remember all the conversation, but he was having a conversation with Srila Prabhupada about preaching, and Srila Prabhupada said, if I would have said that you just have to follow three regulative principles, he said, I would have had thousands of more disciples. He said, but I can't change that. This is a science. You know, there are, you know, the four principles of religion. There's the four pillars of sinful life. You know, this is the medicine, and we have to take it. It's a science. And it's set up that way. And we also, we can't change this process and this medicine that is there for people in general.
Yeah, on the honorary degree thing, it's not like people get honorary degrees that just sort of pops out of the sky. I mean, they're working hard over the course of a career doing amazing things, you know, right, whatever the standards are. And then the university honors them for their work. It may not be that they're doing the standard program, but they've done a lot of stuff, and they're being honored for it.
Oh, yeah.
So I guess the angle then is, if we just give it our all, even if we're a little bit not... You know, we might get honored for the good work we put in, all the credits we did do, even if we didn't do the whole thing. So there's no scope there. I just sit around, because people who get those honor degrees are doing a whole lifetime full of stuff that is inviting some honor.
Exactly.
So, you know, of course you can be a bum and Krishna can do anything,
for
but
example,
I wouldn't
count.
Huh?
He's a fifth grade dropout, but work he did so much. Even Prabhupada quote one of his, he did tremendous work. He didn't go to school, or you can say he dropped out from.
And he got a degree from Oxford, right? Honorary degree.
He got a Nobel Prize.
Yeah.
But work he did is tremendous, more than PhD.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, all your Prabhu, you give that some anecdotes of Srila Prabhupada, you know, that how he's explaining things so nicely.
Hmm.
So, I just want to share one conversation that one time his disciple asked, you know, Srila Prabhupada, how come, you know, you're explaining all these very simple things that we see around us, and you explain it in such a Krishna conscious way and make us Krishna conscious by these little things, not even big philosophies. And Srila Prabhupada said that, I always think about these things. 24/7, you always think about it. So even from that angle, like, you know, you don't have to be a big philosopher, but just look around, you know, then you can get, there's so much to learn. And I just want to share also that you mentioned about, you know, devotees chanting their rounds following 50 years. So I was just reflecting that, to give an example of the difference, that when I had my job, you know, I was there, I was important, I was needed by them, but they all saw that I was doing whatever they asked me to do, but they all recognized that I wasn't fully committed to them. So in a similar way that one may follow, but there's one thing following, and there's other thing being 100% sold out to the process. I mean, I'm not saying this with offense to anyone, but analyzing my own self, I found that's one of my major problems.
Hmm.
That being sold out to the process and being practicing the process seems to be a huge difference.
Yeah.
Just want to share that.
Yeah, because it's an internal thing. I mean, we do all these external things, but it's really the change of heart that's important. Yeah.
So we understand that Krishna's complete, doesn't need anything, yet he seems to hanker the love of his devotees. So it seems, or it appears as though his completeness depends upon us, or his devotees.
That's true. I mean, the Chintabhedaveda Tattva, I mean, he's completely complete. He doesn't need anything, but still he wants our love.
Where does it say complete person cannot have a desire or greed? Where does it say?
Yeah.
A complete person, fully satisfied person cannot be active or desire. Where does it say?
Yeah, that's a good point.
I guess I have a simple brain because I'm thinking, if I'm satisfied, I'm not hankering for anything. If I'm hankering for something, then my satisfaction is not 100%. It's
right.
It's less until I achieve that thing I'm hankering for.
But he did, what he's desiring is not separate from himself, because we're also parts of Krishna.
Krishna is completely satisfied. That doesn't mean he is inactive.
Right.
Because we have that misconception from the impersonalist view that Brahman is nothing, you know, everything is like no movement, no active. That's wrong conception. I was mentioning that Pundarik Prabhu mentioned about Kripa Siddha. I remember the pastimes of Tamal Krishna Maharaj with Prabhupada. The Tamal Krishna Maharaj ask that question, what is Kripa Siddha really means? I'm paraphrasing, I don't remember exact sentence. So then Prabhupada said, sometime you don't want something, but I see you need it, so I'm forcing you to have it. And then Tamal Krishna Maharaj says, like example, Prabhupada says, just like I'm demanding you to give you life, this life, you give this life. You may not want it, but if you make it, if you give this life, then you'll go back home, back to Godhead. I guarantee. So that's why Kripa Siddha doesn't mean I got mercy of Prabhupada, I do nothing now. No, no. Kripa Siddha means I'm full-fledged, active, aligned with Prabhupada's idea.
Right. But just thinking a little more about the question of because we are an infinitesimal jiva soul, some things are inconceivable and we'll never be able to fully understand Krishna, how he is, why he does things. We just don't have that power. We're infinitesimal jiva soul. But Krishna, we understand from the scriptures, he is complete. And everything is actually Krishna. So when he desires something, he's not desiring something other than himself. Mm-hmm. So it's also still, he's, you know, within as complete. Mm-hmm. But there is meaning to the word achintya, of inconceivable, and we have to accept that our position is we'll never understand fully some things. And they say even Krishna can't understand how powerful he is. And that's also inconceivable.
That's a very good point. Very good point. Yeah. He is complete.
Yeah.
But when he's seeking pleasure from Radharani, it's not like he's going outside. Radharani is him.
Right.
We accept Krishna is Supreme God, Radharani also Supreme God, inseparable.
Yeah.
So very good point.
And because when we want something, it's like outside of ourselves, and we're thinking this will, but that Krishna is different than us. Yeah.
So Srila Prabhupada taught us the prayer. If you so desire, Krishna, please, ... Okay?
Right.
But actually, it just seems like, what's the use? I mean, Krishna may desire and he may not desire. So what's the difference if we are asking anything?
Well, because you want to please, if you love somebody, you want to please them, you want to do what they desire. You don't want to do something that they, you know, that they don't want. I mean,
but we already know.
Some things displease Krishna, some things please him.
But it's usually we're praying for a
for
change,
like
an alteration in the material manifestation of a situation. Isn't it better to just pray to be able to embrace Krishna's will, Krishna's desire in this situation?
Yeah, I think both things are there.
Okay.
I mean, ultimately, yeah, you have to know that we're not the controller, and even though we may ask for certain things, it may or may not happen, but it's okay to pray to Krishna for certain things. It's good to, I mean, even in the Bhagavad Gita, the people, when they first come to Krishna, they're asking for four different things, you know, but that's good because, you know, they're asking from Krishna, or there may be different reasons, but they're approaching Krishna, and then they become purified. So in the same way, to you may want like that prayer that you're quoting. I remember first hearing it when they were asking Srila Prabhupada when he got sick, and he said, "Well, you should pray that. Oh, Krishna, if you so desire, you know, you can heal Srila Prabhupada." So that's a good prayer, and it's nice to pray that way, you know, but we also know that Krishna's ways are higher than our ways, and, you know, he may want to take someone back home to be with him, you know, or he may have some more business in the material world that he needed to do. But, yeah, ultimately, Krishna is in control.
Isn't in New York when Prabhupada was sick, Prabhupada actually asked the devotees to pray for him.
Yeah.
We just read about it. Prabhupada said, "You can pray because I have come with the mission of my Guru Maharaj. It's not fulfilled. So you please pray that our Guru Maharaj should have a long life, my dear Lord, so that he can fulfill the mission of his Guru Maharaj."
Right.
So those are healthy prayers. Desire is eternal.
And we have some power in the sense that I like telling this story when Bhaktitirtha Maharaj was gonna go, it's when he was still Ghanisham before he took sannyas, he was gonna go behind the Iron Curtain and preach. So he went to get Srila Prabhupada's blessings before going. And Srila Prabhupada was very pleased that he was going there to preach. He gave him his full blessings. And then there was a bunch of devotees in the room, and he said, "Now you give him your blessings also." And somebody said, "But Srila Prabhupada, you just gave him your blessing. You know, what good is our blessings?" And Srila Prabhupada said, "No, you give him the blessings also, because every devotee, every Vaishnava has the power to give some blessings." So we can also... we also have that power, whatever it's coming from Krishna, but we can use it in that way. So, question?
There's a real nice story that I heard about. Srila Prabhupada was in front of the...
There's a real nice story I heard that Srila Prabhupada was in front of the deities and he was praying. So one of the disciples asked Srila Prabhupada, "You were praying for a long time. What were you praying?" And Prabhupada said that I was praying to these deities to protect another deity. There was another temple. They were having problems, and you know, so Prabhupada was praying to one deity to protect another. I thought that was just it's of course above my my head, but it's such a personal thing, and this is the thing that I love about that is it's so personal. Prabhupada is praying for one deity to protect and help another deity.
That's nice. All right.
All right, so here's within devotional service in its full form, it's all increasing the rasa. I mean, we hear stories of the gopis, they have some problems. Yeah, the relationship. You know, I mean, to me it's poetry, but...
Wait, did you say greasing?
Increasing, greasing, greasing as well in American language. But increasing. I mean, we hear stories of the gopis, the cowboys, they got some problem, and, you know...
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't pay my utility bill. I got a... No, I mean, it's like there's some problem, and it just increases their relationship, it intensifies it. So, in one sense, we have these problems, and in conditional life, it's always an excuse to turn away. But in devotional life, it's always an excuse to get more intensely connected.
Yes.
And yeah. And then the other thing is, you know, it's not like perfection is some static position. I'm there, and now, you know, I'm in the deep freeze. I'm good. You know, I mean, we say it's alive and it's expanding. It's always increasing. It's not like, you know, it's pure devotional service and more pure and more and more and more and more. It's not like you get there and now we're done. We're in the land of the perfect triangles or some Greek thing, you know. It's always increasing. It's dynamic. Maybe when we have a sense of increasing, it's like, geez, I got $1 million and I'm still miserable. I need $2 million, you know. And, you know, but that's, you know, in devotional service, there's always satisfaction, but it's always increasing. You know, Krishna's, in one sense, we say Krishna doesn't always, you know, his ability to know himself is in competition with his creative expansion of his abilities. It's just always increasing. So... It just brings more pleasure, as compared to bigger utility bills.
Good. Thank you very much.